This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Dennis Mangers, who's the president of the California Cable and Telecommunications Association. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you.
Did you attend Speaker Nunez's and Assemblymember Levine's press conference today?
I monitored it with my staff, but didn't actually go in the room.
Okay. Summarize from your point of view what happened there and give us your reaction to it, please.
Well, part of it was fairly humorous. Assistance to the speaker allowed the telephone companies to redecorate the speaker's conference room in 70s-like paraphernalia with lava lamps and shag rugs and beaded curtains over the entries and that sort of thing. And it was designed to create the illusion, as the speaker later said, that nothing has been changed in franchising law since 1963, which is inaccurate, of course. As you know, it's been changed a number of times. And it also was designed to create the illusion that California is somehow stuck in a backwater of technological evolution, and only the telephone companies can bring Californians into the bright new future.
Okay, give us your take on that question.
Well, it was silly, of course. The cable television industry in California has just recently completed virtually a $10 billion upgrade of its facilities so that it's capable now of doing anything that Project Lightspeed or Verizon's Fios can do. And just about everybody in the business knows that the cable platform is a very robust platform capable of anything they're describing. So it was theater, and I felt badly for the legislators involved because to some degree I thought they were kind of victimized and given wrong information and too little information in other cases.
Okay, well, the purpose of California Politics Today is to get all the information from all the points of view out and let everybody figure out what they want to think about it.
Yeah, well, in this particular case, it looked to me like there was all too much input from the telephone companies and far too little from cable, far too little from local government. Satellite, of course, industry wasn't represented at all. Other overbuilders such as RCN, Sure West, others were not represented as well. So pretty much the only viewpoints represented in that press conference today were those of AT&T and Verizon.
Okay. Could we back up a little bit and get a little bit of background on the cable situation in California as it now exists? Do you have access to the number of cable, internet, and voice-over IP subscribers that California cable companies have at the moment?
Not broken down, but if you look at them in aggregate, I think we serve about 8 million customers in California, and those subscribers are predominantly served by Comcast and Time Warner, which are virtually equal in terms of their number of subscribers in California, followed by Cox and Charter in that order. And then a variety of smaller players like Bright House and others, on down to very small players. So totally in California, I have about 225 members, the top four, of course, which represent most of the subscribers, and then smaller ones down to the small mom and pops that still exist in various areas around the state.
Okay. Now, your organization is called the California Cable and Telecommunications Association. Do you or don't you include Verizon and AT&T as members?
No, we do not.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
They're
telecommunications companies.
Well, and that's because the telecommunications is added because we have now become a telecommunications provider as well. But this is a trade association primarily for cable operators, as described under the law, who now, by virtue of that word telecommunications, are also entering the phone market. And
I got it.
As you know.
Okay. Are you able to estimate the amount of money paid by your members in franchise fees now to cities in California?
It's in the multi-millions of dollars. I don't know the exact figure, but I can tell you, give you some examples of the impact it has. For instance, in Los Angeles, where the satellite industry has now succeeded in taking on about 25-26% of the market.
Right.
The city of LA has lost about $5 million in franchise fees as people have migrated from cable to satellite.
So the city has lost $5
million. Yeah. And so
does that mean that the whole franchise fee used to be about $20 million?
Well, I don't know what the exact figures were.
Okay.
That's why I'm just giving you an example of the magnitude of losses years.
Right.
If you lose 25% of the market, you can kind of figure that out.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons we're very concerned about the current a business plan of the phone companies,
okay,
because that can only make it worse.
We're going to get into that.
Okay.
How happy would you say the cable operators are with the franchise agreements that they now have with the cities in California?
Well, happy is not the word I'd use.
Okay.
I would say that after all of the years under federal and state law that have joined them in a franchise relationship with the cities, both they and we have developed a process that works. And what it has done is it has ensured, among other things, that television became a different animal in the process of this franchising arrangement. For one thing, cities got paid for our using their rights of way.
Right.
And for another, unlike broadcasting, we were able to dedicate public educational and governmental channels and localize the process so that people could actually have access to television. And as you know, all over the state, they're taking advantage of that in various ways. And also, as we've wired the communities of California under the supervision of cities, we have put free drops to every school and library, and in many cases, boys and girls clubs and places where children gather after school to do their homework. And of course, I think one of the most important things that has been accomplished by local franchising is, thanks to their rules and supervision and our relationship with them, we have now provided our upgraded product to every home they required us to serve in their jurisdiction. And that, too, we'll get to in a moment, how that differentiates us from the telephone company's plans. But if you ask cities or cable, they'll say those are the major benefits that have been that are derived from this relationship.
Okay, now one of the non-benefits that some people say have derived from the situation is that there's no competition for video delivery services outside of satellite. What's your response to that complaint?
Well, first of all, you have to remember that saying outside of satellite is kind of silly in a way, because when you've lost 26-27% statewide of your market to a major provider that's been able to, in many ways, replicate your content, that shouldn't be taken so lightly. That has become a very major competitor. Then, of course, there are overbuilders around the state. Like here in Sacramento, we have Sure West that has now overbuilt our territory and is serving neighborhoods all over the Sacramento region with a franchise just like ours. RCN and other providers are doing the same in other places, Pasadena and various places around the state. And so there are, in some markets of California, three and four different providers from which to choose.
So do you believe then, as a general proposition, that there's sufficient competition in the marketplace for the delivery of video services and voice over IP and broadband internet as the situation exists today?
I don't think anybody would say that. I would say, in fact, that if the two phone companies have found the technology to come into that market and provide a bundle of services that approximates cables and maybe is as good or better than satellites, then that clearly has to be better for the people of California. In fact, the more competitors that can provide like services, the better. The trick is getting those providers with like services somehow like regulated so that your competitive marketplace truly is on a level playing field, so that what you're doing to compete comes down to price points, it comes down to quality of service, it comes down to customer service, the kinds of things it should be, not who has been allowed to make such a much less investment, or who has been invited to serve only narrow neighborhoods or provide only substandard service.
Okay, so you as well as the phone companies are deeply in favor of a level playing field. That's
very much so, as any incumbent would be. You know, you've been in one regulatory paradigm. Now a new one is being suggested, and in this particular bill that's been introduced, the paradigm shifts rapidly, very little transition, and the benefit virtually all accrues to the new entrant and leaves the incumbent trapped in legacy regulation with far greater costs and burdens.
Okay, let's talk about what the telephone companies want or what this bill wants. Would you say that's pretty much the same thing right now?
The way the bill is written now, it virtually approximates what the phone companies want. Now, I'm assured by both the Speaker and by Chairman Lloyd Levine of the Assembly Oversight Committee that that's not their intent, that this bill is currently just a first draft. But I don't know whether it's happenstance or what, but that first draft happens to pretty well approximate what the phone company's wildest dream would be.
Okay. Now, a central proposition of that bill is a state-level franchise. Is that right?
Exactly right.
Okay. And, yes. And as you understand it, how would that work?
Well, the way they propose for it to work is on the operative date of the bill, every provider of cable television would go to the Department of Corporations instead of their local counties or cities and get one state franchise that would allow them to operate within their footprint within the state, anywhere in the state.
Within their footprint, that's important, isn't it? It means that Verizon would operate only in areas that Verizon offers phone service
in. I shouldn't have put it that way.
Okay.
It would actually allow you to operate wherever.
Wherever, okay.
And it's likely the phone companies and others will operate where they have upgraded facilities.
Right, but it would mean that the AT&T and Verizon could invade each other's territories if they wanted to build out plant from scratch in those areas.
Yes, and okay. The same would be true of everyone.
Right.
The problem there at the moment is that this bill so far doesn't permit cable operators access to the new state franchise on the same date as the new entrance, the phone company.
When does it allow them
access? Well, it has very vague language in that regard, but there's some allusion later in the bill that suggests that incumbent cable operators would be required to continue providing their PEG, public educational and governmental channels, and free service to schools and libraries and institutional networks until 2008 or until their current franchises expired.
Okay.
And that leads us to believe that, regrettably, so far, there's no language in the bill that really provides a level playing field about date of access to the new state franchising model.
Okay, I just want to add that the bill is entitled the Digital Infrastructure and Video Competition Act of 2006.
Yeah, except that only the telephone companies are really incented to compete.
Right. The bill passed now as it's written, what kind of advantages, in your view, would that give to the non-incumbent phone companies?
Well, pretty significant, I think. For one thing, they would have far fewer obligations in terms of public educational and governmental channel dedication. They'd have fewer obligations in terms of networking various institutions in various cities, as we've already been required to do. The biggest advantage they'd have is that this bill would virtually let them go only to California's most affluent neighborhoods to provide their fiber service. Fios in the case of Verizon and Lightspeed for AT&T.
Just as a little digression here, could you compare the architectures of Fios and Project Lightspeed? It's my understanding that one is fiber to the home, fiber to the premises. One is fiber to the node. And
exactly,
is that right?
Yes, Verizon is fiber to the premises, and Project Lightspeed is fiber to the node or neighborhood, with then reliance on copper, the existing copper infrastructure, to go to the home.
Do you want to comment on a technological basis which you think is a superior approach, or why one company is doing one and the other the other?
You know, I wouldn't comment. Each company has obviously taken a very careful look at both the now and future technological options.
Right.
Verizon, if you read their literature, believes they've really got a lock on the future by doing fiber to the premises. And cable, of course, has a hybrid fiber coaxial infrastructure, and telephone company seems to think for the moment that their copper fiber hybrid works fine for them. So, no, I wouldn't comment on which is superior. I would say in any case, it looks like the bottom line for the consumer is that the content, product, and speed would be similar for all three of those fiber products.
Okay.
Now, there is a rub here.
Right.
The rub is that neither Verizon or AT&T intend to bring that fiber product to every neighborhood. In Verizon's case, they don't have a backup product, so their intention is to take, as they have in the other states where they've gotten this kind of state franchise, their service initially to only the most affluent neighborhoods. Now, AT&T has two products. Their fast speed, 25 megabits per second, light speed, they intend to bring to the 90% highest value customers among their base, and for everyone else, they intend to provide something called Home Zone, which is merely repackaged DSL and EchoStar's satellite programming.
Did you say the top 90% of their clientele?
Yes. They reported in a report to Wall Street in May of 2000.
That's most of the people then, though, isn't it?
No. I said they intend to provide Lightspeed to 90% of their highest value customers.
Oh, I see.
And that means customers who are spending approximately $160 a month up.
Not 90% of all their customers, 90% of their highest their highest paying customers.
And only 5%
right.
of their lowest value customers do they intend to provide Lightspeed, and then everyone else gets this so-called home zone.
Okay.
And some legislators are beginning to say, you know, AT&T, if you can afford to spend $67 billion to buy Bell South
right.
and recreate the AT&T monopoly, why are you only spending $1 billion in California when cable spent $10? And why are you only bringing your best fiber product equivalent to cable to the affluent?
Okay, let me ask you about two other places where the opposite of what you've said has been said and get your comment on,
sure.
on that. I interviewed Ken McNeely, who's the president of AT&T California, 2 days ago.
Fine guy and a good friend of mine.
And I asked him specifically about franchise fees, public access programming, and INETs, and he said that AT&T would be doing the same thing that cable incumbents are doing. Do you agree with him, or was there a semantic issue here, or what?
Oh, well, if they were doing the same thing, what they would be doing is whatever that local jurisdiction has required. For instance, in L.A., I'm told there are 12 PEG channels. In Sacramento, there are 6. And in some jurisdictions, there are none because the locals don't prize it or don't want to program it. So if they really wanted to do just what cable would do, they would go get a local franchise, as they have in some cases, and they would simply do exactly what cable has done. But instead, what they're trying to do is get a new standard set in a state franchise that will, in many cases around the state, end up having them doing less than the cable operator is doing in many jurisdictions.
So is this where the argument, the public and the political argument is going to be about whether or not they really are going to be required to do the same things that the incumbent cable companies are?
Well, I think it'll break down into several arguments, if I know this place.
Right.
The first argument will be, Mr. Speaker and Mr. Levine, have you established clearly enough that there's a need in California to change the paradigm from local to state just because telephone companies asked you to?
Because you're saying you're okay with them competing with you. You want them to go through the same process that you did city by city.
Well, either that
right.
or follow the same rules altogether. So if the Speaker and Lloyd Levine think that you need to have a new state franchise because we're in some kind of new era where, unlike cable, the phone company shouldn't be required to go city by city, county by county because it's time-consuming or costly or whatever, then we would want the rules in that bill to be the same for everybody starting on the same date.
So would you support that then if you were included in the same rules? Would you prefer a statewide franchising arrangement?
Well, I wouldn't say prefer, but I would say yes, we'd support it.
Okay.
If it were a new statewide issued franchise, and it was a level playing field, and we both paid the same amount, dedicated the same PEG channels, the same amount of support for the PEG channels, and we were both required to serve everybody with our best fiber product, just like cable is, then we'd go for a new franchise.
And would you support the state standards being up to the highest levels that are provided in any municipal contracts now?
Well,
in terms of franchise fees, public access programming, INETs, and so on.
That's not what's being discussed.
Right.
And the answer to that question would have to be no, because the highest standards, of course, have been set in cities of the largest populations, and they're not relevant to smaller cities.
But you would be willing to keep in place under state jurisdiction the same standards that are in place in, say, for Comcast and Time Warner in Los Angeles.
Absolutely, if the other entrants into that market were required to follow the same rules.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I'd like to talk about redlining. I asked Mr. McNeely about that. He said they're not going to do it. They're going to build out everywhere. What do you say about that?
Well, and
the people who spoke today at the press conference were all very adamant that there wouldn't be any of this redlining either, as far as I could see.
To tell you the truth, that's baloney.
All right.
Yeah, pure baloney. The phone companies have somehow convinced various legislative staff here that they're AT&T, they're Verizon, they're above this business of redlining. After all, we're the phone company. You should trust us. We've brought telephone service to everyone, haven't we? Well, yeah. Over 100 years, they've brought phone service to just everybody. In fact, they have 85% of the market, and it's been heavily publicly subsidized. So no surprise, that's pretty universally available. But now we come to video and broadband. They don't want to be required to provide that universally, as cable does. In fact, what AT&T is doing is planning, as I said, to bring Project Lightspeed wherever they want. And that means affluent neighborhoods, as they reported to Wall Street. And they intend to take this kind of substandard second-tier product called Home Zone and deliver that to the rest. And that's why you see in this bill this little line they were able to get in there that says that the build-out would be by satellite.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, what it means is Home Zone,
right,
their second-tier project,
right,
has a satellite product wrapped into it, EchoStar, with which they're in partnership.
Right.
So they're creating a little illusion here. Yeah, we're going to serve everybody, don't worry. But the best fiber product that's equivalent to cable, we're only going to bring to the 90% highest value customers, and the rest are going to get Home Zone, which is repackaged satellite.
So I'm looking out the window here at a satellite dish, and I'm wondering, do these companies, satellite companies don't need franchise agreements at all, do they?
No, and they don't pay any taxes or fees. Federal government prohibits local governments from charging taxes or fees of satellites.
So that means if AT&T provided video service through satellite as part of their plans, that the franchise fee wouldn't apply to that portion of the revenue stream.
And there, my friend, you have disclosed their Achilles heel and why local governments are leery of them, because they really intend to spend only $1 billion bringing Project Lightspeed where they can find the most profit, and everywhere else they're going to put in Home Zone,
which would mean, of course,
pays no franchise fees. And by the way, satellite service can't bring peg channels.
Nor can it bring the broadest broadband capability that fiber optics can.
Oh, absolutely.
Or a return path.
Yeah, that's why they've packaged their DSL product, and as I told you before, the comparison there is Project Lightspeed really is high speed, 25 megabits per second, and DSL, 1.5. So Congressman Markey, when he heard this pitch before Congress, said, so what you mean, Mr. AT&T, is you intend to bring light speed for the rich and snail speed for the poor. And to tell you the truth, they don't have a very good answer for that.
Okay. Among the things that Mr. McNeely said also was that he knew of no plan to violate net neutrality on the part of the phone companies. Could you tell our listeners what you understand by net neutrality and whether you believe his claims and what the cable industry's position on net neutrality is?
I think in that case our positions would be fairly similar. We don't deny access to our pipes currently. In fact, any concerns you've heard expressed about net neutrality seem to be some kind of imagined future concerns, but I don't know of any actual real problem right now that anybody can point to.
So is your understanding that the cable industry is not planning to or considering or thinking of putting on the table a system under which providers, alternate voice-over IP providers such as Vonage or Skype or information providers like Google, MSN, or Yahoo would need to pay the cable system an extra bonus to get priority in the network, and other providers who didn't wouldn't?
No, I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is that we, like they, don't have any plans to deny access, but we, like they, are protecting any future business options we may have. We've paid a great deal here to develop infrastructure, and as you know, we pay a great deal for content to put in that pipe. And speed is of the essence here. And there are lots of products that people may approach our pipe to provide to various customers that have a degradation effect with regard to the quality of our service, or a slowing, if you will. And so it could very well be in the future that anybody who's a distributor should keep their options open with regard to the business implications of operating a pipe. I'm just saying that as of now, nobody's conceived of such a notion. That doesn't seem to be a problem that needs treating. And if at some point policymakers believe that access is being denied, or that inappropriate business practices are being used to unfairly charge for services not rendered, then that's a time for a government to take a look. Otherwise, government should keep their hands off that issue.
Okay. How do these discussions and developments in California fit into the debate in Washington, D.C. about telecom reform?
Well, they're integrally related, as you can imagine, because anything that emerged successfully at the federal level would without question, probably preempt anything being discussed at the state level.
And also, what impact would what California decide have on policymakers at the federal level?
Well, you know, some would say nothing, that they wouldn't even notice, and others would say if a state as important as California, with its population and fifth among the nations of the world economy and all that, actually came up with a new law, that it could in some ways inform or influence the federal process. And I'll be very candid in that regard. That's one of the reasons I would like to see to it that we get it right here, because if there is any chance that a federal process that would preempt across the nation any state bills, I'd want to make sure that if it was going to be influenced, it was influenced properly.
Right. Outline your vision of the ideal reform or update of California's franchising laws for video and data distribution.
Well, my ideal would be that whatever we do, whether it's retain the current local franchising process or move to a state model, whatever we do it with the kind of proper finesse, the proper planning, the proper collaboration and consensus building, so that local governments and all the providers have been taken into account, and the new model that emerges is as close as is humanly possible to the truly, but often elusive, level playing field, so that the only issues that come down in terms of who prevails in the marketplace are those who finally found a way to get it to the customers legitimately, cheaper, better quality service, and better long-term sustainable customer service.
Do you want to say anything about content, whether you expect that, however this plays out, that the content available to people over the phone systems is going to be more or less equivalent to the content available over the cable systems now?
Oh, yeah, you know how that works. I mean, everybody who's a provider does very thorough study to find out exactly what the public wants, and then they go pay the various providers to get it. And what we pay is primarily based on their own perception of the market demand for that product. So we pay a lot for Disney and ESPN, and we pay less for some of the less watched niche programming.
So there's not really likely to be any transformation of the content.
If you look at the first new competitive product, it was satellite, and do you notice any real appreciable difference in content between cable and satellite? I mean, there's some minor differences.
Right.
But for the most part, that's the same. And right now, if you look at who Verizon and AT&T are negotiating with for content, it's almost exactly the same.
Right. Okay. What I'd like to do in the next, as we sort of wrap up here, is talk about the politics of all this.
Sure.
And who's involved, who you see as your allies, who you see as not your allies, and how you think the process is going to proceed from here.
Well, the way it will proceed, of course, is that the Speaker and Mr. Levine's bill is slated for a hearing in the Assembly Policy Committee. It's supposed to be heard April 24th. It would then go to a fiscal committee where these policy issues we're talking about would get only the most cursory look, and only the financial implications would be considered, onto the floor of the Assembly. The Speaker, because I think he really wants to get this right, I think will probably hold meetings with us. He'll probably accept some amendments. But he will intentionally move his bill, if I know the process, and be fairly successful in the Assembly, unless there's a lot of pushback on these problems we've discussed. And then,
focusing on that for a second, where would that pushback come from?
Well, I think the biggest pushback they could expect is from members of the minority caucuses who are afraid that their particular constituencies, be they Latino, African American, Asian, Pacific Islander, gay, lesbian, whomever, may be left behind in a cream skimming or redlining scheme that was permitted to the phone companies. And then what you might call social progressives on the Democratic side, who I think have already started to weigh in, saying, you know, we don't want a bill that violates the values of our particular ideology, which is that anybody that wants to compete here needs to provide its service to everybody without regard to color, socioeconomic status. And then frankly, and I don't think they anticipate this, but I think Republicans are going to weigh in. Republicans here kind of consider themselves the stewards of a free marketplace, a capitalist economy, and ours here tend to be pretty fair-minded in that regard with regard to the party. So in other words, they're probably going to ask some tough questions about, you know, cable is just as important to California as the phone companies. Why wouldn't they have access on the same day?
So do you think this will break out on partisan line, party lines?
No, I think the phone companies think it will.
What do they think it will break out on?
They naively think that Republicans are so eager to have open, free markets relatively unfettered by government, that their suggestion they ought to be allowed to come in and compete with no expectation, you know, will just roll through.
But wouldn't the Republicans be smart enough to realize that if they're talking about a level playing field for them and a tilted playing field for the cable companies, that isn't the dream of capitalist freedom that they're extolling?
That's exactly what I meant by Republicans who consider themselves stewards of the market. I think that's exactly what they will think. And I know several of them on these committees. Names, in fact, come to mind. Senator Batten on the Senate side and Assembly Member Russ Bogue on the Assembly side, who have said on a number of occasions, I want this bill, I want any bill that emerges from here to be fair to cable and telephone, and I want them to all have access to the same rules.
Now, on the question of minority or disadvantaged groups, for whom redlining of one form or another ought to be a high priority, would you think that they would essentially then join in an alliance of sorts with the free marketeers on the bill?
It won't appear that way the way they approach it, of course, because those alliances are pretty, you know, ephemeral. But
right.
But in reality, yes, I expect them to weigh in and say to the Speaker and Mr. Levine, if we really agree there needs to be a new model in California to incent competition and more broadband deployment, then it ought to be fair for everybody.
So then who in particular would favor a system, assuming the validity of your arguments about redlining and the unlevel playing field, who is it who would stand for redlining and an unlevel playing field?
Well, I can't imagine. I will be surprised if anybody is willing tomorrow to vote for this bill in its current form, given the fact that anybody who reads this, any fair-minded person who reads this bill will realize it does not lead to a level playing field.
Okay, now
it definitely advantages the incoming phone company.
Would your preference be for a new bill, for a bill that would create a statewide franchising system with a level playing field, or would you prefer that there not be a bill at all and things remain as they are and that the phone companies would need to go city by city and negotiate franchises the old-fashioned way?
Well, it's an interesting hypothetical. If everything I've described as a level playing field were somehow able to evolve from this difficult process, then you could envision how it might be better for everyone if you had a new model.
Right.
But frankly, before I would go to something less than a level playing field or less than in the best interest of the people of California or unfair to the incumbent cable operator, I'll settle for the existing framework any day.
Okay. Last question. I interviewed Ken McNeely from AT&T. I'm interviewing you today. These are both going to be up on the Utopia Media California Politics Today website. I don't know where anyone's going to get this much material about this. Maybe California Connected will get around to it in a few weeks.
This is clearly the most thorough interview I've given in weeks.
Right. What my question is, would it be possible, would you agree to participate with Mr. McNeely in a joint interview/debate to talk about some of these issues?
Oh, anytime.
Okay. Could we use some of your studios here in L.A. or around the state to do it?
I don't know around the state, but...
Or in Sacramento or
in
some
location,
place.
Yeah.
Okay. All right,
yeah.
Good. All right, well, maybe we can talk about that later. In the meantime, why don't you just wrap up by telling us what your group's position on cable franchising reform is right now and what you think the public ought to be doing to weigh in on its own behalf.
Well, so far there's only one bill that actually has been fleshed out. There are two bills treating the subject. Senator Martha Escutia has SB 850 lined up, ready to go if she believes she wants to enter the fray.
What does that provide for, and do you like that?
Well,
one?
Right now it's just a spot bill.
Oh, okay.
And she's
so has no content?
No, she's watching how this debate unfolds,
right,
and will decide if she wants to use her vehicle.
Would you talk to her? Have you talked to her about providing a bill that you like?
We've talked to her many times. Well, we're not promoting a bill
right at
this point.
Right.
And Senator Escutia, of course, would not be carrying a bill for us.
Right.
She's got her own mind, and
right,
she'd be carrying a bill that she thinks is in the best interest of all the players.
Right.
And then, of course, the other bill you have is the Speaker and Mr. Levine's bill, AB 2987.
Right.
And that bill now is in its first iteration. We will post an oppose unless amended position tomorrow.
Right.
And then we will, our plan is to work with the Speaker and Mr. Levine, because they've invited us to do so,
right,
and try to be very constructive with our suggestions for amendments. And if they treat those areas that we've described, to the satisfaction of our incumbent cable operators, then, we could be supportive.
So you'll know after those, in about how long, do you think, about whether or not they're going to move to include the provisions that you think are essential or not?
Well,
is it going to be a black and white thing, or is it going to be a gray thing, do you think?
I've actually asked the chair of our committee to put this bill over and not hear it on April 24th.
I'm sorry, which committee?
The Assembly Utilities and Commerce Committee.
Right.
I've asked him to put that bill over and not hear it as the Speaker currently intends on April 24th, because I think it's too early. And we haven't had a chance to discuss amendments and to have the sessions that they have proposed.
Right.
But if it goes forward and the bill is in this form, then we would outspokenly oppose it.
Okay, so you're saying that between now and the next 18 days, between now and the 24th, but you're saying that even if they meet with you between now and then and you reach some sort of compromise, then it would be okay for you to go ahead with the hearing on the 24th?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if a compromise or a consensus were forged, no
right,
question about it.
But
it just seems to me,
right,
with issues as complex as we're describing,
right,
and with the phone companies as intransigent as they are on the build-out issue, I don't think anyone should get too optimistic.
So given that you expect that there wouldn't be a consensus or compromise bill by the 24th, you think that there shouldn't be, is it a hearing or a markup, or what's going to happen is scheduled for the
24th? At the state level, we call it a hearing,
okay,
a policy hearing.
Right.
And the members, both Republican and Democrat, will hear witnesses on both sides.
Right.
And then have to make a very difficult decision. They could, several of them could say, I could support this bill if you took amendments that dealt with these problems I've heard about.
Right.
So in a way, kind of like the federal markup process.
Right. So those amendments would be made in committee on the 24th.
They could very well
be.
Uh-huh. If the Speaker realized that to really satisfy the needs of the policy committee, he needed to take some amendments, he could take them on the spot.
Right. So, in other words, there are at least two paths to compromise here. One would be negotiations between now and the 24th that would lead to a different bill. Secondly, would be amendments within the committee on the 24th.
Exactly.
Absent the consensus resolution before the 24th, you'd rather see that date postponed?
Yes, absolutely, until there was a better chance to derive a consensus. You see, if you go ahead and move this to policy committee too quickly,
right,
and it looks like you're willing to settle for simply a political result and not a consensus policy result, then members start losing the confidence in the process that their voices will be heard or that anyone is really earnestly concerned about the issues they've raised.
Well, do you believe, though, that if it were postponed to the 24th of May, for example, whether there would be any significant difference in the amount of input that you'd have and the likelihood that the sponsors would modify their positions?
I probably wouldn't put a full month on it.
Right.
I'd probably add another week or two till the next meeting of the committee.
Right.
And just simply tell everybody, I'm going to hold, let's say, two or three meetings.
Right.
I'm going to listen carefully, and I'll make the judgment the way you kind of just now put it. I'll see if I think, the Speaker and Mr. Levine, could see if they think we're any closer to compromise or if the phone companies show any additional willingness to move off their we won't build everywhere stance. And then, you know, I have to make a decision. I either don't take this bill forward because it's clear I don't have anywhere near a consensus, or I kind of jam it forward knowing that many people still have unresolved concerns.
And okay.
Well, that latter, I hope, doesn't occur.
Okay, well, I think what we ought to do on the 20th or the 21st of April, talk and get an update from you about how you think things have gone in the 2 weeks from now and what you think will be happening on the 24th.
Fair enough.
And I'll try to get Mr. McNeely to join us, perhaps.
Well, that's always a pleasure. We're good friends, and we've had many discussions like this before, so I'd look forward to it.
Okay, good. Well, thanks very much for talking to us today on California Politics Today, and I hope we'll be able to get further discussion about this question on some of the networks that we're talking about so that more people will have a chance to find out the positions of both sides and make up their own mind and communicate with their legislators about what they would like to see for California.
Well, that's what the process is all about, and that's why I'm glad to have this kind of interview so that more people come to understand issues that sometimes seem like real insider games.
Good. Okay, well, let's make it an everyone game, and thanks again very much for talking to us.
My pleasure.
Okay, bye.
Goodbye.